We had Tom on.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that you made that comment in the 2011. I'd say it's better than sex, remember?
So he said it's better. Oh, I feel it's better than sex. And I think I was like, and it was a mad atmosphere, wasn't it? I think I said, I'm not sure how you doing it, Tom. I think it was something like that. I think it was his comment. But the big bit about that, I have a really clear, vivid memory of that. And I remember as it happened, and I'll be fair, it was like, you know, people talk about it, and it seems to be like moment stops in time. I can vividly, I get a shiver.
Well, I say this all the time.
It's weird. Yeah. I can vividly remember when it happened, and you knew it was so late, you can't miss. This is going to go in. And I remember looking at Tom, and we were sat, and it felt like for minutes, but it must have been the tenth of a second. And I remember going and saw the moment where all the fans were, and when they were going, and I think I laughed on the, because it was like,
giddy.
Yeah, I like laughed, and I was able to see all of this, and we hadn't done it, and this, like Newcastle won the, like last time. I would get that from a Middlesbrough fan point of view, and you know, you play for Blue, you come and watch every week. And then it went up, and the noise. And I have this really clear memory of that. Yeah, it's strange.
I say that to everyone. With me, that, yeah. There's a moment, and like you say, it's mm-hmm. a tenth of a second where it's silent.
Yeah.
And I remember that so vividly. It's just the ball dropped. I watch it on replay, and I still think he's going to miss. You know what I mean? But there was a moment where everyone just goes, like a sharp intake of breath. Yeah. Like I'm getting like goosebumps.
Got it. I don't know why.
Yeah. Disbelief? No, he hasn't. He has.
In the 90th, like, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? 90th minute, you're like, and I remember that just like, yeah, it blows my mind if something about it.
I proper felt that. And there'll be bits, I guess, we'll talk about Birmingham. So I would have come, and I guess, I always worked hard, so I stayed in the team. But, you know, you come with a big transfer fee, the team actually would do, and then they drop it off. And I guess it didn't quite happen, but I was always in. I divided the crowd to think, oh, look, he works hard. But I wasn't really producing, you know, what had got me here. And then that third season, I was dropped, I think. I think Graham Hard was put in the team, and he was ill. So I think I was going to be on the bench, and that was a blow for me, always played. And we went to Norwich, and he was ill. So I got put in the team by default. And I scored this goal from, like, halfway line, bent it with my left foot, which I would never do. Don't know what happened there. I would never even swing that from that distance. And then it flipped for me, and for about 2 months, couple of weeks, like that was the best I'd ever played. And then you've got everyone behind you. And then I broke my leg. So I reckon I had about, because of the type of player I was, I reckon I had about 18 months, 2 years at that age where I would have been right on it. And so there's that tinge where you sort of never really made the connection for different reasons I guess when I come back a couple of, are you an honest player? You know, people had that about me, but never really that next bit, which is...
Is that Bobby?
It's tough, yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, I'm vulnerable enough, I guess, honest enough to go, yeah, that's a real thing. You come here and you get your big chance. You know, you come from the levels. And, yeah, I guess I'm lucky. I've got the education stuff and I can sort of balance it off, but you can understand land players, you know, and I would see a lot of them where I would remember Blues players when I first come here and they'd finished... And you're like coming into a club and you're on the up. And you can almost see that. And then you're done.
Yeah.
At the end. And then you go, oh, right. So I can almost see where I'm at. Yeah. And you've been, it's been your dream to be a footballer. And I'm lucky I get the chance. But it's gone, like, yeah. Yeah, it's a straight. Yeah, it is a straight.
When we spoke to Graham, she was saying he just really wanted that. Was he good enough for the Premier League?
Yeah.
And obviously it was taken away from him. And you've got that unfinished business, haven't you? They're like,
yeah.
Did you get the whole?
Well, 2 months, and I remember a game. So I was, and yeah, I'm not somebody who comes into a club with a, you know, I probably have imposter syndrome, come from like that young, but then I was worthy. I'd got to this place. I remember playing Man City here, Keegan's team, and I had been on maybe 6 weeks into like having the crowd, and I remember coming off going, yeah. Like, I'm at that level. They were signing big players and we competed against them. It was a great game. You know, it's really at it, top level game. And you come off going, yeah, I'm all right. And that felt good. But then there was the injury here with Tranmere. And then it was sort of like gone quick. Where Grange would be somebody, So if I'm coming through the ranks, because I looked at the stuff on here about Devlin and Grange, and they're significant people for me. I would have played against Grange at Brentford, right winger left, and we would smash each other, me and Grange. I didn't mind a tackle. You know, I would tackle, and we would. And he would always, there was a lad at Plymouth, Dominic, can't remember his surname, and Grange. If anyone asked me, they were the two players who I found the toughest left backs. And then I ended up playing with him. You know, being a good mate, same mentality. And it was, look, yeah, there was something about, I'd done some research on this. There is some research on, like, August birth, you know, like later on in the quartile. They don't get in academies as much because there's a really high percentage. If you are born, you remember school, like September the 1st was like the academic years, wasn't you? So like birth quartile one is September, October, November, and then two is December, January for great round. We're like, you're the youngest.
Yeah.
So actually anybody you're in a school year with, they're up walking and talking on the first day you're born. So it's quite a bit of development.
Yeah.
So academies never picked, because they picked on size, didn't you? If you think of our
back in the day,
football, they picked on size. Remember Lillishall and stuff like that? Those people went. So there's a lot of research on it. But if you are somebody,
that's quite a point, that is.
But if you're somebody from a younger, if you do get through an academy and end up at the end, then you, you're more likely to get the contract, because it's like a resilience sort of stuff about it. So I think there's some stuff on it. It works both ways. Yeah, you don't get picked first up, but if you stick at it, there's like an underdog bias that means you're more likely at the end. Yeah. So I look when you put on there.
Tortoise.
Yeah, and Grange is 23rd of August, and Devlin's like April, isn't he? So he wasn't like early on. I'll have a little look, yeah. It's about me university stuff, I'll have a little look.
Yeah, yeah.
It made me think.
But just to dial back then, so hello, John. Hey. John McCarthy, good morning.
Yeah, no, I've been chatting. I think I'm a little bit giddy, excited to be at just back here and just be at the ground. So, yeah, thanks. Yeah, really appreciate you inviting me.
Yeah,
thanks.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. Nice to be here.
So, 700 appearances ish, over 50 goals, Northern Ireland international, record signing for York, £1.5 million signing for Blues. So, you talk about like imposter syndrome there. What was it like carrying that around?
Yeah, it was, and I think I would have felt that at times. You know, I'm quite introverted. If you look, I don't want to get too deep. If you council estate in Middlesbrough, single parent mum brought up, and so you are almost like battling, changing. So you get in, and you know, I don't play for the county. I don't play for Borough Boys or anything. I'm always a decent, you know, like the local leagues. My team would win the league or get to a cup final or be second in the league. So I was always playing at a decent level. But the other lads ended up, they were scouted at different times then, wasn't it? Under 14 schoolboy forms, they were scouted for Middlesbrough, Newcastle, Hartlepool, Darlington, Ipswich and Charlton had a lot of scouts in our area, but I never was. So you don't never make those teams. So you know you're okay, but actually I'm going to go off to uni, do a sports science degree, be a teacher. And that would be my background. Play a load of semi-pro football, pick up some money. I used to get 25 quid a week to play for Shepshire Charterhouse because it paid my rent. My rent was £25 a week as a student. So you're sort of doing that, and that's your career. And then I get a little chance later on, and it takes me a while. I'm in the lower divisions for a while around York and that, but it gives me a good ground, allows me to get technically better because I had good physical attributes. But then to go into the Championship at Port Vale, and we did all right there, but then to come here, you know, it was something that I never thought I would be able to do, and I did really appreciate it. I did enjoy that time, to have made a football club the size of, I could appreciate how big a football club this was because of my journey, and I never took that for granted. It was great to be signed by the club.
So when you were at Port Vale at that time, because that was quite a set, was that for John Rudge?
Yeah.
Was that you and one wing Steve Guppy on the other one?
I was lucky, yeah.
That was some team, wasn't it? No, people talk about Rudge's Port Vale quite highly. So did you have links then with Blues anyway, with the lads that were at Port Vale previously that had come to Blues?
You know, my links is coming from Middlesbrough. I remember my links always seem to be Middlesbrough. So there would have been Bernie Slaven and Paul Kerr and people who had gone to Port Vale who I would have watched as a player. When I got to Birmingham, Kevin Poole, they always seemed to be my links. As I grow up, I guess the different generation, You know, it's all the regional. You didn't see much football on TV. You know, people of my generation who listen to this, I try and teach this to the young people. Sports coaching degree I'm on now. It was a different time. So you saw the FA Cup final, and that's why it was big. You saw one game, live game a year. England, if they were in the World Cup, so Trevor Francis, 1982. You know, where he scores, he puts the ball across, Brown robs that game. You know, so you remember, you would know names from that, and you remember Europe. So you grow up watching Liverpool players and knowing them, Nottingham Forest for two seasons, and so as it is on a Blues podcast, you remember that Villa team. For, you know, a 12-year-old, I'm 12 in 1982, so you remember who was in Europe and almost those players. And then your local Sunday programme would be Newcastle, Middlesbrough, Sunderland. You'd just see that. Yeah. So we wouldn't see much of the Midlands. You'd be aware of a couple of players, but you wouldn't. I wouldn't know this area. That was just the fact of when you were growing up. It's so much different now. So it was very like regionalised, and then those clubs who played in Europe. So I didn't have much knowledge of Birmingham really until you start getting in the leagues and playing them. And I would talk about when I'm at York and Barry Fry, you know, made a big impact and you could see something happening and they're putting the money in and you get to play against that team. And then Birmingham would turn up at Bootham Crescent at York City. Wow. I'd take over and then you go, well, this is different to the football. This is a different football club to where I'm at. And then you get a chance to come here because we were lucky in that division to come here when there was probably, I would think about 40,000 if we came to the game. Yeah. And you play at this stadium. And then you go, yeah, you know it's different. You know it's a bigger football club on the journey. So Port Vale was, I was lucky. John Rudge spent ages bringing this team up. And I guess I was like the last bit. He signed me and Lee Mills. And we came into this strong team. And we did finish 12th the first season in the Championship. And we had a good cup run. So that helped. We knocked Everton out of the FA Cup. Scored the winner. We had two games against Leeds. We got to the fifth round. Gary McAllister. So there was, you know, you're on match of the day, and it's as mad as it sounds. We went to that. I think that's how people knew me. We went to Everton, and it was really cold weather. Everton had undersoil heating, so there's only four FA Cup games took part that day. And our game, I did really well. I had this good game, and Trevor Brooken picked me up on, you know, match of the day. On the, I remember sat at home. You know, you've come quite quickly. Wow. I was sat at home and watching match of the day. And we were the first game on because they scored to go 2-1 up last minute, and we scored and we got a replay. So those two goals, so it was the big game. And I did all this stuff. They pick you out as the player at the end. And I'm sat there, no knowledge of this. I go, wow, match of the day. It was like, but then everybody watches match of the day. So all of a sudden,
your profile has just gone.
People, it was really significant, I think. So then people are aware of you. People start talking about us, a player might get a move, and we backed it up. We finished eighth the next season. We nearly got the ball. Well, I think Rudgie was on a little cut of transfer fees. I think he did all right.
Thanks for her rookie.
And he sold Guppy, he sold me, he sold Lee. Well, I was lucky. I went into a good team. Paul Barnes came into my ball, played here. Paul Barnes came into my York team. And changed us, you know, and we got promoted. We had a promotion at Wembley, Paul Barnes. Yeah, I spoke to him on the phone the other week. His son's doing well at Newcastle, isn't he, Harvey? So Paul Barnes was great. Emma came, and so I would have seen him go to Birmingham.
I did not know Harvey Barnes, Paul Barnes' son.
No, honestly, yeah. So he's got a little finish on him, hasn't he? Yeah, he's like if we can finish.
You know, you're getting old now. That everyone of the parents that we love, all their sons are like adults now, aren't they? Doing it all, but
So I'd seen Paul do that journey, and he made a big influence. It changed our team. You get lucky if you end up in a good team, and the same thing happened to Paul Fair. And I walked into a team that was, you know, we had some good players here, didn't we? You know, Trevor Francis had some. There was some money. There was some backing, and we were always one of the strongest teams in that. And that's
You mentioned earlier then that the kind of player he was no nonsense, right midfielder, pacey. So how do you feel that you could kind of, that would impact in today's game? Do you think you could do a job in today's game? I think someone made a good point last week to say these players that are doing really well now, the other question is, would they do well in your game and the 80s and stuff?
I think the big The big change is the technical ability. And if I'm honest, I didn't have a lot of that. You know, I had good physical attributes. Again, I think the good fortune for me was that when I played 4-4-2 against 4-4-2, wide players weren't like Trevor or Chris Waddle or something, stayed on the touchline and got the ball. It was an era where you were expected to do a little bit of both, go back and forward. I could do that. So there was something about that that allowed me an opportunity to almost go to where I got to. And then I worked hard on my technique. I would spend a lot of extra time, you know, with the ball getting better. And it got me to, like, when you play with better players, you feed off them. So, yeah, it was a case of I would work really hard. I guess that got me through the lower levels of the league. And it allowed me to get up to this level. And then I would talk about being a Blues, where that's probably what I did for a couple of seasons. And there wasn't the next bit, was it? For a couple of seasons, really honest, there wasn't that other bit where I provided the goals. Or if I created an assist, it was, you know, I think the goal I scored here against Middlesbrough was like a 50-50 on a keeper. I went in for a tackle with him and it went in the net. I never had that other little bit. And that was frustrating. It's a big club. You know that half of the fans are almost with you. And there was, I think if I'm honest enough to go, there was that battle where half of the fans, hey, look, it works really hard. It does this for the team. There was always that defence that kept me in the team. And I think my teammates would know that.
I don't know. I think as a Blues fan watching you, I think we appreciate that more than someone who's technically maybe better, who doesn't give as much. So
that's the baseline, isn't it? That's the minimum that's expected, isn't it? But like you were saying earlier, you knew you had more to your game than that. You don't just want to be the guy that works hard.
And you're 1.5 million, you know, you brought in and they're expecting the quality. And so there's a while it didn't happen. And I guess I felt that. And you're surrounded by good players, you know, and there's probably a little bit of me, my background that, you know, you can get some, like a Paul Barnes or somebody would love the tag of coming in as the new striker. And that, I remember him coming in at York and he would thrive on that. And I'm probably, I just want to improve myself, get down and do the work. And we came here, I think he'd won the first four games. He was top of the league that year. We had Sunderland here, my first game. And we lost it. Lost it 1-0. So that was the year Sunderland Charlton. Remember the Cup final, by Donker.
Was that Alan Johnson? Sunderland?
Yeah. So it's
keeper.
Yeah.
So I remember that, and the changing rooms would have been over there, wouldn't it, in that tunnel. So I remember coming in from a first game there. And so all of a sudden, that's the first game you lose. You just sat, and I think we went on a terrible run. I don't think we won a game for about 15 games, and you've come in on the yeah. So we ended up finishing. We turned it round, but there was a little hangover from that. But yeah, I think it wasn't that third season. I was telling you just beforehand. Yeah, I got lucky. I think I was dropped at the beginning of the season. We went away to Norwich. The Blues fans travelled as they always do, and I've scored a goal where I've picked it up on the halfway line, went on, burnt it in the top corner, and then you've won a game for somebody, you contribute. And for then you have everybody behind you. And that, again, without being corny, that, like, the power that gives you, wow, the belief that gives you on there, when you've got like 25,000-30,000 who are behind you, and it just like flicked a confidence switch. And for a couple of months there, that was the best football I ever played. And, you know, I guess the rest of my life, that will, you know, somebody can say, put you back a place in time, or give me that 2 months again. Just give me that feeling again. That was, yeah, that was.
Feels like everything's working, everything's clean.
In that zone. So, but that's, when I come back here, there's an excitement. I love seeing the pitch. And I know I had that bit, but there is always that little tinge of regret that the injuries, you know, held me. Yeah, it didn't allow me to really make the impact that I wanted on Blues. Yeah, and that is a real feeling with me. That is there. It nags away at you. But I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm going to go with it. I don't need counselling, but it does leave me with a tinge of sadness based upon that.
What tell us about the manager and who you got on with, and players that you kind of knock about with and have a drink with, I suppose, and knock about out of work. Who were the
players here? So I guess it's McCaskill was Steve Bruce and Gary Ablett. So if you remember my background, I played for Shepstead Charterhouse, Gisborough, you know, York, it's Port Vale. Like, you know, really good clubs in their own right, but different. And I remember they said, oh, they'll pick you up at Sandbach Services, like 9:30 or something. And I've turned up, and Steve Bruce turned up in this massive, like, car, and Gary Ablett, and I'm in the back in there. And so there's I guess the imposter is a little bit, whoa. It was real, and they were great for me. So I spent a lot of that first year with those two. And it would be coming to train and take turns, as mundane as sandwich run. There's a shop on the way out, your turn to get like an old-fashioned meal deal, bag of crisps, bar of chocolate, a drink and a roll. And it was somebody's turn. And then Gary Ablett would, loved a quiz. Would, you know, there was a 10 to tackle in the Daily Express. And he'd read them out. He'd be quiz master. And me and Bruce, you go ahead. And like that's every day.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So it is. And I can get that cover about that. I got this chance. And I remember them talking about, and not big-headed. There were two brilliant people. I heard Steve Bruce on Radio 5 this morning as I'm driving. It makes me smile every time I hear his voice. And they were talking about, you know, the titles that they've won and that. And Gary played for Liverpool and Everton. And I'm sat in the back wondering whether I mentioned me Anglo-Italian runners-up medal. You know, it's like, and yet I'm putting the same kit on and I was playing with them. So there was that. I remember Steve Bruce doing Dion Dublin's move to Coventry from the car, the speakerphone in the car one day. It was like, you know, he would just randomly take these calls. But brilliant with me, the pair of them. And yeah, and I still miss Gary. That's sad. You remember his, you know, all going to Gary's funeral. He, you know, I wouldn't be one who, like football, while you're there, you're really closing in with them. And when I've come back and met players, it's like you've never been away. It really is. That is a feeling. There's something about that dressing room that you can have. I saw Paul definitely when I come, and it was great. It was great to see him. Like, we worked out, we'd seen each other for 20 years. Michael Johnson, I've come across with, I've had it. It's actually Gary Rowett and people. So that stuff is, I guess, a bit of a thing. But yeah, Gary, we did keep in touch a little bit randomly. And I remember having a phone call with him. I don't know why I'd rang him. And he'd just been he'd had an interview at Liverpool with Rafa Benitez. And he'd just been given the reserve team manager job at Liverpool, his first coaching job. And he went off and did well with Roy Keane. I know he was really well thought of. Yeah, I guess something in life doesn't feel fair, you know, that somebody like Gary Ablett isn't around. They were a really big influence on me. Yeah, Gary and Steve, they maybe don't know that, but actually almost lifted me up to the level. So that was my first bit. And then I think I ended up here. Kevin Francis.
Yeah.
I think the very first game was like a League Cup tie, and I was cup tied. So I remember watching it from a box down here. And so for the first few days, I trained with them, big Kevin Francis. And, you know, in the gym, and Nicky Foster, you know, yes. it's Nicky and Grange, I would have remembered from Brentford. So being in around them. So I spent the quick. Wow. He was the quickest, maybe the quickest player I ever saw. Yeah.
Yep.
And even after his cue. Yeah. So I guess that's the character. And then as I'm around myself and Egan Bennett was a character, makes me smile every time I see Michael Johnson. I would spend Fridays in the Arden Hotel, you know, with those. Furlong would be around there. But there was that core group of us who would be there pretty much.
Benno's supposed to be mental. We're getting him on in the new year.
Benno. I'm not like that comedian like podcaster. You know, hopefully I can get across to it.
We've
Benno.
He's just hilarious. You wouldn't, I mean, all goalkeepers are maniacs anyway, aren't they? But you just wouldn't see that as a Blues fan of the time, thinking that he's the life and soul of the dressing room.
Him and Michael Johnson, like a double. I remember Benno getting, the makes me laugh. Benno used to like go fishing, and he travelled back to Worksop, and I remember him saying he pulled over by the motorway level, and he could do a little bit of fishing, and his wife was round, just checking up on him. Why aren't you back yet? And he used to give me, Gaffer's got us in double sessions. Double sessions, and he sat got us in double sessions. And this duck went past and just quacked, like really loud. And I remember him telling me, and the way he tells the story, and his missus just went, get yourself over that. She's, you know what? And that was
it. Not like another woman in
the... Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah, that was
not having an affair.
Yeah, it was just fit. Where the other lads would be out golfing and stuff, he was heading back. And yeah, but him and Jono could just, I don't know, he would mimic like Des Walker, you know, just one of those people characters, just funny and... So I was fortunate to spend quite a bit of time with them. And I hope it comes across. It does make me smile when I think of those memories. Mm. Yeah, good times.
So that time, knowing you're talking about when your peak performance on, does that time with the little link up you had with Gary Rabbit down his side, because that was, we used to watch that, didn't we, and go, there's no better right hand side in this league than us.
And that training ground through we spoke about off camera where Benno would ping it and you'd literally probably, like a long jumper, you'd probably have it timed to the step, you'd win every header, and not being a massive player, you'd beat a lot of left backs in the air.
Like, that makes so you play and you know you did that. I didn't realise that as fans you would recognise that. So that does make me feel good that came across, because I was always. And I guess when the scout, they would know, and I'd do like York, Port Vale would use that when they realised, when they'd see me win the first one, so Ben or, and it almost would be, searches down to the big man, because quite often the fullback, wouldn't be the biggest player, and I would win those for the next player. So that's nice that come across. That would have been the sub. But me and Gary Rowett was a really early modern fullback. Our era was 4-4-2 versus 4-4-2. Yeah. You're almost up against your man. And, once I got here, there were better midfielders, and I started to realise that. As I'm coming up through the years, tactically, I'm going, midfielders, what are you doing that for, passing it sideways for? It's, let's get the ball forward and run, put it in channels.
Yeah.
And then as I realised how stupid that was as I moved through the levels. And as you move through, you go, now they're the better players. The players who get on the ball and have time, who pass the ball, actually... as you move through the quality, they were the ones. And actually, I was a bit of an athlete. I had some pace. I could do that. But those, I really saw that. And I guess it's helped me as I've gone into coaching later on, almost seeing through the levels. But the technique, the first touch of the players that I got to play with at this level and against, that was the next bit. Gary would be, and I'd joke about him, what are you going past me for? I'm not going to give you the ball. Away off. Dates have the ball, but brilliant go back. And then I was able to.
But that goes back to you saying you could get back.
That makes, you made his life. Not many midfielders did the work back, did they? So when you and Gary worked that way, it's all we had two wingers at times, didn't we?
It was. I have fond memories of that. And I think that would be the real restraining regret. I think that season we were ready to go and do something. And I was an important player in the team. I felt like I'd probably got about four goals in the first couple of months of the season. I was creating and we were flying, and then I got injured. And I think that was the season. If it was going to happen, we'd have gone up. Because I think I probably was a loss from that team. I was gone for all the season, and that was the Barnsley game out here. But to being here on your crutches.
Yeah.
And I'm going to watch the lads go through that. Yeah.
When we talk about this, I don't know what was worse. The heartbreak of Watford, going so close. And that's the first time we'd experienced it, wasn't it? And just heartbreak. But then that versus the numbness of the Barnsley game where half an hour's gone and the game's dead. The toy's dead. And we just like...
Yeah. You feel the power of the fans. If I get bring you back to that Watford game here. That's the other time when I really understood the size of it. He talked about the shiver, from when I was commentating and Blues won the World Cup final. I remember coming out of that game, and we were close then, weren't we, to playoff final, close to the Premier League. And you came in to listen. I was used to being full, but that was a different night. And you walked out, and when Dealey scores after a minute, that noise, I still feel that. That noise, I've never known anything like that again. In football, because you're in it, you're in the middle of it.
It was shocking as well, but
the answers, and it just went. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling that, and almost, that's us. And then, Holdsworth got sent off, didn't he? Yeah. And I was the one sacrificed there. And I can understand that, because I was just going to go up and down, and probably Trevor felt like he needed another goal. But then with 10 men,
Who did he bring on for you now? Don't know.
Might have been Brian. Would have been Brian Hughes.
So that sit someone in.
Yeah, there. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But I should probably have a look. And you remember the penalty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Early, but, it was just that was sad. It was disappointing. But I guess the next year I was playing well, and it was frustrating just to
Did you get him just before? Was it just before that?
Yes, so it was a tramway again. There was a strange story of this. was it? Tranmere had done well in the cups, FA Cup, League Cup. They'd had this team that were going well, a bit like our Port Vale team, a smaller club, but just got a good group of players. They knocked Middlesbrough out of the cup, and like I would remember that a few days before. And the referee the night, he was a Tuesday night, playing Tranmere, were going well. Jeff Winter was from Middlesbrough. I remember seeing him in the tunnel. And hey, no, you're not accusing him of anything. I remember him saying to me, just almost like, hey, don't worry, they knocked the bar out in the other day, you'll be all right tonight. And it was just joking. Because he was a good referee, and he was a genuine referee. But there was I got the ball early on over there, somewhere near the halfway line, and I pinged it across to like the furthest point in the 18-yard box away from the goal, like this little corner here. And Marcelo went up for a header. I've just drilled about penalty. We got a penalty. we'll have it. He scored 1-0 up. We were 3-0 up early. There was a big battle in the pitch. There was punches thrown and everything. It was just going to a comfortable win. And then, I just go to bend the ball down. The lad studs up straight leg and, broke a leg. And you've done it. It's quite innocuous at the time. And actually, not loads, an average Tuesday night game. Tranmere were expecting.
You could have been subbed before then because the guys comfortably won.
Yeah, it was still the first half. We were that well up. So I guess that was a, that was like a.
Did you know as soon as he hit you?
Yeah. It's weird. Your leg wobbles. You just know it. And it wasn't like smashed right through, it was just a crack, but. Oh, my leg's hanging off. Anybody who's had some sort of broke wood, but that feels weird. So yeah, you're off and you go and get fixed. And probably the way you want to come back. I probably came back too quick and did it again at Man City. If you have your time again, you just go. We were looking to get in the playoffs, and you think, I'll get myself back in. And I guess the club would have wanted you back in because they'll remember. And actually, yeah, I probably should have just seen out the season. It would have been right. And come back,
We've had conversations about that on here. That there's certain players that want to get back, and certain players that would just be like, even when they're not 100%, and you're one of those players, like you say, probably to your own detriment, really, to be like, come on, working hard and hard and hard, and then coming back a bit probably too soon.
I think it was, and then actually, I would look and be critical of myself. Players like, I guess, Paul Furlong would be a player who I would have really rated when I've been here. And when I think about it, when you come from his background, Chelsea, and he's coming down, you go, and Stan Lazaridis, the play at high level, Steve Bruce, Gary Ablett, my background in the game and the different levels, I can see the difference in quality. You can see it, and then you look at Premier League players. So then you start to go, well, what must Messi, it's like their levels and how they see the game, the pictures, when I can see it through my levels. But he would have been somebody who would have, when he played, you knew he was right at it. So he'd be 100%. And I think at the time, there'd be criticism. But actually, he knew that when he went on that pitch, that's the hardest position to play. I would have always joked with Paul Barnes and stuff, But that back to goal.
Yeah.
So I think that's the hardest position in the game to play. And I guess goalkeepers would argue different. But I think that is. And he was just his touch and his quality. And when he's finished it. So I think when he went on that pitch, he was pretty much close to 100%. I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm saying, I wish I'd have been a little bit more like that. Yep. So when he was out there, because once you cross that white line, people do think you're fit and they will they will judge you on that. And I guess the other aspect is, I remember when I broke my leg and being here, I brought my daughter, Lauren, to the first game. We were just in a box over there. And, you get loads of attention when you're first in. Just, how are you? I'll go back. And as you're coming into the ground, you do. But then at 3 o'clock, it's the 11 who are out there. It is everything, and that's how it should be, and that's how it is. But as a player from both, you see that. So the moment you cross and you go on that pitch, you will just get judged.
You say that though, but and especially with yourself, with how quickly you came back, you see that as a fan, don't you? You can see when someone looks slightly off it, and you get that now. Even I think like Willemsen this last season definitely came back too soon. Mm-hmm. But then fans with eyes on it, they're looking at it properly, he's not fit.
Yeah.
Whereas other fans will go, he's fit, he's shit. You get the same thing in the stands, and somebody going, look, he doesn't look fit. Then they go, oh, he's not trying, he's been terrible, he's awful.
Yeah. You can't fool the fans. You can't fool, and you know that in Over Morris, when you're out there, you can feel it. So in that bit where I'm not doing great, I know that, and you're close to the fans, but you can feel, you know, that they're behind you. They want you to do well because you're working hard, but it's quite
a challenge you could have got to before, and then you're not getting to it all.
Yeah, it's a really good. You know, you would just go to the fans, and there's different levels of fans, like you say, you know, and they're all just as valuable as each other. But you know, the fans down the pub, which is, wow, what a chat. That's so important for them, and that's how they watch football. And then, you know, journalists and media and that watch football and might look at it from, you know, like I teach now, I don't have higher education, so it's all about critical discussion and pros and cons and strengths and arguments. So you're always trying to teach people, so you get
a group, emotional intelligence,
yeah,
involved.
So you get people who would do it like that. But in the round, I guess the opinion from all of the fans doesn't lie. You know, there's some truth to all of that. And I think we all know that, and you can feel that out when you're out there. You know when you've done well, and you know when you know you're being found yeah. out a bit. Yeah, but.
So going to the national side then. So you're talking about the players you played down here with. What about the players you played against, particularly on the nationals, so the Frances and the Germanys? And
just like
you said about imposter syndrome, but did that kind of just propel you to be like, okay, let's have it with these?
Who's playing against them? Because they were big teams then, weren't they?
Yeah,
big players.
But I guess, you know, so Danny, I had good memories of Danny Sonner. Oh, have you had Danny Sonner on?
Yeah, but he's living it up in LA, you know.
Is that where he is?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, we were on about going over, but we can't. Christmas and all that.
Oh, yeah. So he would be another one, just to get a room with Danny in the World Cup final. And he like, nice as, like, do anything for you, but. Oh, he liked himself. I covered all the mirrors up in our room, and he was lost for a while. He didn't know what to do.
I've seen his profile for Christmas. He'd still got that shirt.
Yeah.
Pointless buttons, the first four.
Yeah, he's good looking, good player though. Another one of those midfield heart. Where I went, yeah, you're better.
Rolls Royce.
Technically, yeah, he was, and he added to us. Another one, good coding. So, God, what was it? I've lost train of thought again there. What did you say?
National side.
Yeah. So Danny, so we're in that squad over there. But I would tell this as in, yeah, it was strange. There's some interesting stuff. My surname, McCarthy, it was Republic of Ireland that asked me first. It would be my grandma who would be Catholic. You know, my grandma is actually, my granddad's name, McCarthy, would, it was a couple of generations down, so I didn't qualify. Mick McCarthy, who was the manager at the time, they were the ones that inquired, and I think it was but my grandma's from Northern Ireland, and the next thing I knew, I got invited for a B game and went across to there. Really interesting times. So, you know, there's like, as you get to my age, it's sort of like a history of football that you've been through, you know, that Premier League stuff that happened. I remember playing in a game, going from a student in Nottingham to play a game in York under 19s, and on the way back, so you had to get kick off at 11 o'clock, get on a train back at 1 o'clock from York to go to Nottingham, and the stop off was at Sheffield. I remember looking across thinking, wow, the FA Cup semi-final's on there now, you know, because it was big, wasn't it? The FA Cup was big for us, the younger generation, if they can understand, it was massive, the game. And I remember looking at me watch 4:20, and that was Hillsborough. I remember seeing the lights, and when I got back to my digs, everyone sat around the big telly, and it was 30-40. And I would, although it's quite a tenuous link, it was there.
The
train stopped, and I'm looking at the ground, God, the game's going on there, it's massive, what a game. Forest to play Liverpool there, and at 3:20. Once I got back home, I realised all that was happening. Then I did my dissertation on the tail. The whole game changed on that. Heysel and Hillsborough and Premier League came in, so the money came into the game. The new stand, I remember that stand, you know, getting built when I was here. You know, the whole game changed massively. Then when I was with Ireland, the political situation over there, even though I'd not grown up with it, and as you could sense some stuff, there was we went to a camp over there. I remember Neil Lennon signing for Celtic, and he had to leave the camp. You know, there was, you know, effigies of him, you know, hung up. We would drive down the Shankill Road and one side of it was red, white and blue, where you would turn into where the ground was, and the other side was green, white and orange. I had cousins who had real Catholic names, Mairead and Aideen, and their uncle wouldn't call them by that name when I went in. So I was oblivious to the politics of it, naively, and but you're over there, and there's a horrendous bombing that happened when we then were just sent on. But then we went and played against the Republic of Ireland as like a charity match for it. You line up there and at Lansdowne Road, I think it was. So you line up and half of our team are Catholic, half of the team are Protestant. They won't play. It's a charity game to raise funds for this family. They don't play God Save the Queen there. In no way that's going to happen. They won't raise the Union Jack there. And half of my team are singing the Irish anthem and the other half wouldn't have nothing to do with it. So I sort of, football got me like some like bad experiences and go around in there. And we played against, I played against that France 1998 team. Okay, I would have played against Italy. I played against Spain. I played against Germany, 50,000 in Dortmund Stadium. But like one-off games, you know, when the Faroe Islands play against England and the postman and that come. They have to because they're drawn against them. These teams, we were drawn against them and we were probably, with the greatest respect, fourth or we want to finish third or fourth in their group, probably fourth or fifth in a group of six.
Yeah.
But I got these one-off experiences, a bit, I guess, like the Worthington Cup final, where I experienced what those top players do every single week. So I made the most of that. The Desai. I've got Desai's shirt. I guess that's my biggest shirt. But I remember us playing, and I guess I'd seen Northern Ireland through my grandma, and you know, 82 and 86, a nice Adidas green shirt. After a couple of seasons of me being there, we weren't doing very well. We were sponsored by Olympus Sports. That was a bad kit. It was like a really bad kit.
Baggy and normal. Yeah.
We played France. It was on my birthday, 18th of August. So the thing was on. They had this, you know, that white kit, red, white and blue, World Cup winners 98. The date my birthday is on, I just want one of these shirts. I've hit the post and I should have squared the ball to Gillespie late on. We'd have drawn one all. I thought, well, he's usually, it was me and him going for the same place. I might as well try and do it. I'll put it over the bar. But the whistle goes, right, can we get a shirt? Nobody swap with me. Frankly, those shirts.
Shout out Olympus.
That imposter syndrome, that shy. I don't know why. I've walked, and this is true, gone down the tunnel, and I thought, I'm going in. I just went in there dressing them. And I've took my top off, and I was a stone lighter when I played. I was 10 stone 10, you know, really pale. Took my top off, and I walked in. And Desai walked out. He had a little afro comb in his hair. He'd come off early, shower. He was ripped. Oh, yeah. Towel around him. He's like swaggered across. And I swear to you, I've given, you know that like rubbish French you get from JCE? GCSE? I've said something like parlez-vous. I have actually done it. Like, I'm going red now, aren't I? And I'm in there and I look a joke. And Desai's looked at me and he said, what number are you? And I thought, you know that, he realised he's going to, I'll say my number and then they'll all laugh at me. He said, nah. He'll just blank me. And I think he took pity on me. I've gone seven. And he looked, I think he was going to like laugh at me. And he went, I like seven. And he went and got me a shirt and gave it. And I tried to walk out like I was cool, but I think I was skipping
down. Au revoir.
So I think,
Mod two.
I think I remembered Larry Donald the bibliotech. I think I thought, if they got into a conversation, I'd have asked him to go to the library. So it was a shambles, but I guess it sums up where I were, like, I guess a bit of my journey. I got to places where probably, you know, a lot later, 20, when I'm going to be a PE teacher. You know, I'm going to be a PE teacher, probably semi-pro football. And I got all of these other experiences, which I can look back on. And yeah, and this, if I was Birmingham at the time, was bigger than our international team. You know, when I was here, probably playing with bigger players. You know, I played with Neil Lennon and there was Ian Dowie and there was Gillespie. There was a few. And then a lot of us, you know, the big players from the lower leagues as well. So actually, I would come back here every week, and the championship was a real figure. So I guess that sums up, you know, how it was. You were a little bit of a fanboy, I think, sometimes. But Lothar Matthäus, Germany, was 40-year-old playing, you know, and
I was going to say, Ligori would have been a by around about then.
Yeah. I'm wondering he was in here after.
I think it was a bit part, wasn't it, that little time? Yeah. So that would have been Lizarazu, left-back then, yeah, as well. Arguably the best left-back in the world, that point, him and Carlos.
Yeah, yeah, and Barthez in goal.
He goes head-to-head.
You got past him in the post.
I think I mixed him and hit the post. Hey, look, I don't think it was the biggest game in the world for them. I think they're like, what, you know what? They qualified for the World Cup, they didn't have to. So, you know, I could put some perspective on it.
But,
So it was, yeah, so... Some nice memories, but yeah, there's some context to it as well.
It moves us on slightly to what you're doing now.
Hang on. Before we move on, to go back to another big event where you were talking about the Women's Cup.
Oh, sorry.
Of course.
Have you forgiven David Ellery yet, in your mind?
The big thing for me with that was I hadn't played in a single round of that. I played in the game before away at Preston on the Tuesday night, and the game was on the Sunday, and he's put me in, and there was clearly a game plan to go, and we've won 2-0 away at Preston, and I've done what I do, up and down, nothing's coming, you know, nobody will cause us any problems down our side. It might have been, not Nicky Eden, you know, we're a lad along from Sheffield Wednesday, yeah, so I just did my job, and I think that if I look back on it now, and then he named me in the team on the Sunday. And
so you had no inclination, you had no expectations.
I thought, oh, I played here, I might get on the bench, which was all I could hope for. And then I guess a Jerry Gill was left out.
Oh, yeah, that's the story, wasn't that? Yeah.
Would have played all those games, and you come in. So on that day, actually, I'm going out, 80,000, the roof on, unbelievable. So I like experienced that. The Blues fans in there, blue-red, it was like... The roof on, it was just, and that with the roof on, that's the only time I couldn't hear what another, you know, if John or somebody was saying something to me or midfielder, I couldn't hear them. Literally couldn't hear them. It was, and those big games must be like that all the time. But I knew I was playing against Carragher, I didn't have the extra bit to go past. I knew I didn't really, but I can do my job here. And I ended up going through extra time. I played one game, but you know, so I did my job. And I guess that was the game plan. And we got our one moment, didn't we? They probably should have beaten us. Yeah. So they probably should have beaten us maybe 2-0 in normal time. They had other chances. And then we get that moment at the end, the miracle. But then in extra time, we should have won the game. Yeah. They couldn't believe that they had to go through it.
Still 2-0.
We should have won that game.
Yeah. And the bit, didn't we? I was watching it the other day. The energy levels, considering you passed 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It was relentless, wasn't it?
Yeah, Man O'Connor, what he, you know, one leg, what he did. Yeah, almost to call the winners that penalty.
Yeah, that challenge.
Yeah. And then Darren Purse was in his, when I talked about that moment when I felt like out, Darren Purse was in that moment. Just, you know, he was. And to take, you know, he wasn't going to miss because he was in that real confidence moment.
Yeah.
And so that going to the fans. So I can remember that, but a lot of my feeling is just, this is a battle here. I'm not good. I've got to get my head down and almost just be quite professional. I was more experienced then and do that job. And then I remember the penalties. So this, I guess this sums up football, you know. So the court, Trevor comes out, right? He wants to take a penalty. Hey, I'm not that confident, but you're not going to get another chance. So I think I'll give it, yeah, I'll take one. Didn't pick me. Picked another five. So you can get...
You can sleep well at night.
Yeah, you can get cussed on your face. But then the five are going up, and as they're taking the penalties... We realise AJ's he's coming up the fifth one. And me and Nicky Eden actually had a conversation and said, look, if he's taking the one to win it, you know, we'll let him take it. Let him take that. If it's one to keep us in it, me or you has to step up and take that. And we were having this conversation, but you can't. The five that are named on the referee's list.
So you can't.
It's then afterwards you can almost make a decision. So,
well, so you felt like that amongst yourselves that was too big a thing.
I remember me and Nicky Eden. I wonder if he remembers that. I remember it quite vividly. Right, we've got to do this, and then and AJ takes it, and that's it. And we all console him. It's sad, and Trevor, AJ crying. It was, but
so at that time, did it feel like it was obviously AJ wanting to take the penalty? Did it feel like even with Francis, he was kind of shoehorned towards, right, you take the fifth, you be the hero, rather than for the good of the team, someone with more experience?
What I remember, did I feel like when I was... Would Paul Furlong have missed the... I can't remember now.
Granger missed Granger.
Granger missed... Who would be?
Yeah.
Our...
Yeah, so, the stick on.
Yeah. So there's something about... Actually, there was something about penalties where the experience in the game would tell me, I wouldn't go, I think Ferran that might have missed one here on that Watford night. I think I would always pick penalties on the actual game, people who were playing really well. You know when I talk about Darren Purse was in his moment?
Yeah, yeah.
If you can see it in, oh, they're right on top of the game, no matter what position they play, I would pick them. And actually, AJ was in that moment. He'd come on and was
playing ragged, didn't
I? Yeah. So I actually think it was a better decision. Even though I would have took one, I think this frame of mind I was in, I'd have been lucky if I'd scored. You know, if I'm honest, he was probably better.
Yeah.
You know, so really...
Hindsight's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Nicky Eden was technically a good player, would take set pieces and really, you know, calm mind, good footballer. You know, I think he would have... I would have fancied Nicky to score a penalty at that moment. But actually, AJ, as you strike, he was flying, he was confident. He struck it okay. Keeper's read it and gone the right way. But I guess the humour of football, we're all... You know, it's about an hour afterwards on the coach and the lads were winding him up for the bonus he cost them. But yes, so there's something about that, like, dark.
A little bit gallant.
And that was the stuff about. And then AT went on and did great, didn't he?
Yeah.
Had a great career.
It was, yeah. Again, just before the turn, wasn't it? It was the Preston playoffs again, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously the image of him and Trev crying together on the pitch, and you're just like, this is never going to happen. Yeah. It's never going to happen. It's just not meant to be.
So
Barry Froh must be right. Must be cursed.
I break my leg in that game. So after 10 minutes in that Preston game, so we go there, David Moyes, and there's one stand empty, Danny Sonner, and I vividly remember, so I have two, I remember coming in and playing against West Brom in an early game, and I remember being... like having a weird feeling and going out. Usually I go out for warm-ups at the clubs I've been at and there's a few people and they all turn up for the game. I remember going out West Brom Blues and going, whoa, it was full, like for the warm-up. And it was one of my first games in and go, oh, this is bigger. And then when I got back in the change rooms, I felt like I needed to be sick. I don't eat much on the morning of a game. And I went to the I don't want anyone to know. I've only been here a bit and I'm going and I'm retching. Well, there's nothing going out. I haven't eaten much.
So nervous.
So I'm going, whoa, I'm worried. I've got to go and play in this big game. And I had a good game. We got beat West Brom. I remember it was battering them all game.
Yeah.
And they were singing, we only need one chance. We absolutely tortured them. They beat us 1-0. But I'd had this good game. So it was weird because I'd had that like fear stuff and won. I wanted it again because actually it was, you're right, it was adrenaline.
Yeah.
And it gave me so much energy. That Preston game, I remember it being the opposite. My legs had gone. I'm not capable. I'm playing in this big game. We'd won 1-0 at home, haven't we?
Yeah.
And I'm playing in this game. Probably the same thing. We see this game out and you'll do your job. Danny Sonner played a ball through for 10 minutes and I go after it. And if I get there a split second earlier, I nudge it past the keeper too, who would probably go through. We end up clashing, broke leg. Ellery wanted me, thought I was wasting time. It was 10 minutes in the game. We 1-0 up. And he's going to me, get up, get up. And I'm saying, I broke my leg because I knew. And he's going, get up, get up. Made me walk off the pitch. I actually had to get up and like hop.
Ellery again.
Yeah. So, and he didn't appear. You know, he didn't. Yes, was it? Oh, was it Ellery? It might not have been Ellery. No, I'm thinking Ellery because I remember. I need to have a little look, actually. So then I'm off. It's 10 minutes. I'm off. This the massive game on.
Yeah.
So you've forgotten about. I'm trying to have a shower on a crutch. Some kind of doctor comes in, but he wants to watch the game. They're not bothered. Sort of get
It's not like that joke about the rectal examination.
I don't know. I'm done. He popped his head in.
I think he's a doctor.
And he wanted, and I'm so I sort of manage. Nobody's and rightly so. And so I hear David. I hear the cheers. So I know David Healy scored. So I get out, and then there's. Imagine how long I'm. So your body kicks over about 30 minutes, and then the pain starts to come in. So I'm managing, and I remember just being hungry as well. And he took eight. Remember that Trevor Francis was going to take the players off the pitch because there was an empty end for the penalties. But all of that stuff. So I remember stunned. That's a good. There was this massive plate of sandwiches, and I remember I'm starving. Right, wait forever. You said as soon as it's done, I could have a sandwich. I just need like almost like faint. So Granger comes in through it, puts his foot through the door, straight away, fuming. And then he and he volleys these sandwiches up in the air. I mean, it went all over the floor.
So not only have we lost the playoffs,
you can't even get to them because you're absolutely...
I'm on a coach on the way home, and every time the coach goes over a speed bump, my leg is out. But there was like Gareth Stowe, own doctor, who was great. But they looked after me and did a good job. I got metal in my leg. But yeah, that was that Preston game. And that's... I did get back. I got back the next season. I played a couple of games. It was the season we went up, but I was done. You know, I was a physical player. The injuries had took its toll.
Coming as well, hadn't
it? Yeah, and that was we've been. Yeah, but I guess that brings that full circle. My Birmingham journey.
Is that when Devlin came back?
Yeah,
young poor Devlin came back.
Yeah, so that's because when I first came, Devlin was a nine.
Yeah,
and I would have played with him wide. And then he went, and he almost became a right winger in the chef. And Devlin Blues, and you know, so I think I always felt like, oh, did I come in, and would that have been tough for him? He had to go, but he was definitely a nine rather than. And then he became a wide player, really good wide player. And I guess as my injuries went, Steve Bruce would have had him at Sheffield United,
yeah.
And he brought him back, and Steve Bruce had to have a conversation with me where, you know, you're going and. I had a couple of players. He looked after me. He did it as well as he possibly could.
Is that's like full circle again. When you were saying when you were coming in originally, you see the players that are probably thinking, yeah. I'm making way for him, and then you're on the other end of that then.
And there's a reality. I remember the players do at the end of the year, and they hand out the awards, and you're on a table with sponsors and that, and there's a realisation you're done. You can't do anything about it. You can't turn it back, and I'd missed that opportunity, that tinge of regret, and you're just off somewhere else and there's new players coming in. And they were at the players who they were going into that final. And you could have had a ticket to go. It would have been hard to go watch, because I guess some of that journey was to go into the Premier League and be part of that team that didn't do it. And it's in the end, it's Darren Carr, local lad, brilliant, and Devlin and all those people. And please for Brucey and that going up. You're human and you sat it on gone.
You grafted from all of that.
You missed out, and maybe you weren't quite good enough, and those other players were who came in. So, yeah, that's the full circle and the tinge of regret. But then
it's part of the evolution, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It is, and it's football, and you realize where you are and that stuff. But it's still,
you know what? Like you were saying, you was on the Tilton Talk Show talking to my best teams, and your name was constantly coming up in that squad as well. So you are thought of in that way here.
Yeah.
You didn't know, which I hope you don't.
Yeah, you're away for a long time. I would remember being it. Just I wasn't like for long enough because of the injuries. I think I would have.
It's no mean feat. So you broke your leg three times in 5 years, but you still made over 100 appearances there.
Yeah, I would have played pretty much every game the first couple of seasons. You would play it. So some of that history stuff. Remember, we played Man United. After Beckham got sent off in 98.
Yeah.
So you remember all the hype around that? Would he play or would he not? And there was effigies of him, you know, the country. And we played that game here. And yeah, I think I scored in that week 4-3 games. So there's, you know, as you get older, there's like, and I guess the younger generation, but some of the older ones from that who would have lived through that Barry Fry stuff and know that period and know where it is now. Hopefully some of that stuff, they'll remember those issues and what it means. But
that's why it's important to have these conversations with ex-professionals that were here during that time, because otherwise it all gets lost. The internet now has given people such a short-term memory, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That if you lose, it's the worst thing since anything. If you win a couple of games, you're the best out. And there's no people losing touch of the longer-term history of clubs and the players that were important to the club. So
in your career now, obviously you're lived experience.
Yeah.
These students Google you and go, oh, that, what about that? What about this? What about that? Yeah. Do they appreciate what you've come from to, as opposed to someone who's teaching them that probably hasn't?
Yeah. So it is different. It always gave me a little bit of a leg up to teach. So I go back into non-league football, Northwich, Victoria, and I was able to play at like national league level for about 4 or 5 years until 38, even after like 3 broken legs. So I
went going there as well.
We're going right back into we got the third on the FA Cup. We won, got promoted. We would have beat Stafford and gone up in National League North and into. So had a little win, a title at Hucknall.
Where does that sit for you then?
You know you're okay at that age to still play a good level of football, but actually you're slowly getting worse and worse and worse. And your bad is still okay. So there's something about that you can hang on to, but you're never going to be.
Yeah.
Like when you're on the up and
down. Non-league players, though, and he's rolling up on the other team off.
There's a few around the National League. There was some money coming back into the game. So there's a little bit of that around. But yeah, I guess, so I do that. I don't say anything about it, but then they find out. And then it does, and that's hopefully I can go and coach a little
especially being Villa as well, like we were discussing earlier. You get a bit of.
I was going to make Villa blue. But that was going to be my next question. So you're signed for Villa.
Yeah. So I work for the Aston Villa Foundation. Okay, I'm nowhere near the big boys. Right. I'm with the Community Trust, and I work for Birmingham City University. So actually, I'm employed by Aston Villa Foundation, Birmingham City University. We teach a sports coaching degree. And there's a lot of blues over there. You'd be surprised how many staff are in there. And the foundation are good people, like the Community Trust. They're actually doing loads of good work with all of the citizens of Birmingham. It is amazing to see that. I'm a little bit separate. We just teach, you know, at Alexander Stadium. We have classrooms there. And, you know, we're coaching on pitches, sort of linking that stuff together. But there's a lot of good work done by both football clubs within that community. But I also do apprentices, I do endpoint assessments. So Tim Smith, Head of Education at Birmingham City, I will meet with a couple of their apprentices every year. And you do teams call where you almost, they have to tell you about a portfolio and then they show you clips. And, you know, so I get a chance to almost assess a couple of young Birmingham City players, which is always nice. And probably by the second one, they realise that I used to play for them a little bit. So that comes across. So I do get a chance to give some of that stuff back.
Did you all enjoy it being bold, Bill?
Yeah. Do you stress the importance of getting the education to some of these guys that may be doing it now? Because you're a good example of someone who's done your studies and then become a footballer, come out of football. Whereas not a lot of people that we speak to, but there's a lot of stories you hear that you just bank on it down. You have Burns on a couple of weeks ago. Which I said, that's it. School's down the drain. So I've got a 5-year here. So it's done. I'm made. So I'll get you.
And then most of the time, they're not, are they?
It is. It is really something you're stressing, I guess, a bit. But when I go on with those apprentices, it is the dream. And there's a question where it is almost, what's the backup plan, the second career? They have no interest in it. It is everything, and it's the focus. It's a really difficult. I almost have to frame it. Okay, let's assume you have a successful 15-year career. Then what are you going to do? You're still a young man, because they are just focused on football. And we all know the odds. I guess my bit is, when they get released, is to go. I get released from Hartley, probably 18, bottom of the old fourth division. When you get released, don't just drop completely out. So my big thing to say is, it'll happen to you, a lot of you. There's good money in, you know, with the Solihull, you know, Leamington. There's lots of players. Go and do your education, because there's lots of, you'd be surprised how many people come back through university, play good university levels, and then play semi-pro, and then they make their way back in. And if you don't, you have two careers, okay? And I know lots of footballers who will have their job and then just put all their football money away and they buy a house, okay? So don't waste all of the work that you've done, all the talent. Play whatever level it is. You can pick up really good money, step three, step four. People pick up 500, 600 quid a week on top of what you're doing. So my big thing is, don't let it disappoint you, break your heart that much that's you done from the game. Stay in, persist. Jamie Vardy is the great example, but you'd be surprised how many
Player of the month,
other people. Yeah. So you can talk about Granger, Devlin, myself, that would have come through, and actually some of the resilience stuff. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think when I see Granger, see Dev, I see myself, wow, we would appreciate it. And then you can get the chance to do that. It can happen really quickly. I'm in the game at 20, started 21 playing. I'm 4 or 5 years in League 2, League 3. I don't move to till I'm 25 to the Championship. I start at 25. Within 2 years, I'm here. At this football club, wow. And so you can,
so they can get the chance to be 6 years old being farmed through for.
Yeah. And if you Devlin Granger or me, even though it's gone, we can't get it back, I think we really appreciated it. I think we can look back and go, wow, yeah, we got the opportunity.
It's the best era of football, subjectively.
Yeah, I think there was something about that change. Your football, yeah, we would remember Hillsborough High, so than that. And it was, oh, going to watch us, it was rubbish. And I would say it was rubbish. And Sky Sports now, Football 4, I'm not anti any of that stuff. I think it's amazing. But that bit where it was, where it was climbing and it was growing, and the grounds were all changing around us and they were getting better and there was a feel good. And I guess with Blues, so I see it happening now again, don't you, where they're going, oh, they've gone up, they're on this, there's something similar to that period that we, that I came in at the football, Barry Fry had done it and I come on the back of Trevor Francis and we were in here. And I guess as I'd leave, you go into the Premier League with De Gary. That was an amazing time, wasn't it? You know, it makes me sad. I think that's happening again, but I think the people here now, you'll sustain it. And I think the ground, you can see it changing, the training ground. So I think that trial period, that generation will have seen it. I think when it happens this time and it's going to, I think the whole area will be better. And Birmingham City, yeah, you have that, that job with Aston Villa now. It should be like Man United, Man City. Okay, it should be like Everton. Yeah. This is the second biggest city in the country. You have your teams in London. That should just be a point where, I guess, Birmingham become like Bournemouth. We go and establish ourselves and they never go again. Yeah, and it feels like the infrastructure now is here for it to happen. And yeah, that's, yeah, you can see this being, you know, even better and just, yeah, a great place to watch football. So, and then I'll be able to say, yeah, I was a part of that for a little bit.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
On that note, thanks, John.
So, oh, actually, before we go, have you got a message for the Blues fans? We told these in a way that it is nearly Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you'll be out in mid-Jan. So, but is there, have you got a message for the Blues fans?
I think, I guess it's, I would build on that and just say, I think the football club is about to like really achieve its potential. And actually is the second bit, you should look at Manchester City and go, you know, how they almost, I see Birmingham City is a little bit like that. Now look at them. Okay. And actually, I think the money in that behind it, I think it's about time to almost, I think throw away that almost like underdog and it always happens to us. And actually, and have 10 years of sustained success, real sustained success and established yourself. So I think that thing that happens. So that, yeah, that would be my that my Christmas present, the Blues fans, if I could give them that. Because they gave me a lot, just a chance to play here. And some of those moments that I remember from somebody back who never thought you would play football to being there to play for your football club. Yeah, it was a really special thing.